This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Darius Thomas.
I'm just going to go with the flow.
And Karina Anglada.
Maybe should we do some type of intro?
You've thought about freelance, either part-time or full-time, and you have all these questions. Today, we're going to be answering as many questions as we can as it relates to rates, setting contracts, and generally working as a freelancer in the world of sports.
Why are you waving?
I'm waiting on my clap.
Oh.
Karina can call out.
I'm also just being weird.
Sorry, I was like, what's going on? Okay.
Jazz hands.
I can only see. It's in the like vertical mode, so I only see like here.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. I'd say here.
So I saw like this.
I was like, you're doing like-
Mine was in square mode, so.
Okay. 35?
Sure. Oh, yeah, that was a good one. This is going to be a good episode.
We shall
see. This episode is brought to you by... Time that is.
No one. Oh. It's like the Turner. Presented by no one.
No one.
Baller Effect sponsor read now. What if social teams could execute on-brand creative from their phone in under 90 seconds? Well, now you can with Team Plates. It's no secret that we're in a time where content needs exceed internal resources. Social teams want content ASAP and creative teams want to maintain brand standards. My mission with Baller Effects is to make motion design more accessible. So we've set out to create a product that frees your creative team up by allowing non-creatives to execute on-brand content anytime, anywhere. Your team, custom templates, delivered on time, on brand, in seconds. Email Justin at ballerfx.com to book a demo. That's Justin at ballerfx.com. So amidst all of our conversations with all the fabulous guests that we've had, we have sat around and talked shop after the episodes with a number of people. Sometimes we're happy we stopped recording, and other times we would have kept recording. So today's episode is going to be us talking about things that we wish we would have been able to record and chat through with issues that we've seen around the industry, and maybe not even issues, but just things that we think would be beneficial to anybody in and around the industry, especially relating to collaboration, managing scope creep, and freelancing. So I'm going to start with the freelancing side of things. So Darius, give me your hot take on freelancing.
Don't do it. Don't do it full time. Well,
that's the first the thing you're going to say?
Don't do it full time. Do not,
that was the show,
do not jump out there and do it.
Those are the first three words you chose to use.
I live my life by three words. Don't do it.
Okay, come on. Are you being for real? Are you being for real?
Yes, I am. It
really?
You know, I love the freedom of freelance. And Justin and I, you know, talk a lot about, you know, freelancing. We both freelance full time, but we're not really freelancers. We're business owners. And I think that one of the biggest misconceptions is people want to be freelancers, but then they realize that they at some point have to be a business owner.
Okay, so let me interrupt
business.
I'm gonna interrupt you there because I'm the only non like business owner on the call.
Mm-hmm.
How do you two define a freelancer versus a business owner? Because I think freelancer gets like, there's like part-time freelancing and then there's like full-time freelancing. So how do you two define those separately?
I think that is, that's where you start. It's like, and that's why I said, don't do it full-time. Because there's a lot of responsibility that goes with, you know, freelancing full-time. You can do it as simply a, you know, subcontractor or self-employed person and not have a company, or you can do it as a business entity. There are pros and cons to both. One diff- differentiator would be with subcontractors or self-employed. You have a self-employed tax that you have to pay, and you're not able to claim as many things and write off as many things. So if you want to be a self-employed person that freelances on the side, works 1,000 gigs just to get, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, by any means, you know, that's your prerogative. However, there are, you know, a lot of different levels to doing it. So
yeah, I think everyone who freelances is technically a business, right? Because you have to file your LLC, you have to send invoices to people.
But if you're self-employed, you know, you're sending the invoices, but you're not, like, you don't have to have an LLC. You can get a EIN number and just be a self-employed.
I think that's what I've done.
Yeah, strictly because I don't freelancer. Yeah.
I just do literally like 1 to 2 projects a year. And it's like literally if I have the time and if I like believe in the project and I don't, but I have thought about it. I'm like, oh, should I go a little deeper? But then I think about like this conversation. I'm like, nope, I don't want to deal with all that extra.
Yeah.
I think with Kristen a couple episodes ago, right? She was talking about how she freelanced on the side for 13 years at the Heat. And I think that's the best way to start is to have a full-time job already and freelance to build up, not necessarily clientele, but build up contacts and figure out the workflow and decide if it's something that you would want to do and seeing how the communication goes.
You know, going back, I didn't do much freelance at all when I was a full-time employee.
Interesting.
Because it was no time.
It is hard. Yeah, there's no time. When do you do it?
Like,
you don't sleep.
Yeah, at the 3 schools that I worked at, I worked from August till June, like nonstop.
Yeah.
With the only break being, you know, Christmas for maybe a couple days, but it was football season into crossover with men's and women's basketball, then men's and women's basketball crossing over into softball, baseball. And then when with the crossover track and field. So it was always like no time. I wanted to kind of get away from that, but I kind of regretted it later.
Well, I think this is where, based on your skill set, it makes a difference. Because Darius, I think for you, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of your biggest strengths is like your ability to shoot, right? And to shoot, you have to physically be on the ground in another location versus if I'm a motion graphics designer or a graphic designer or even an editor like myself, I can work in my own home, right? So like travel costs, gas, parking, all those things. Like I think in Kristen's case, like that makes a ton of sense because she did a lot of like the motion design, graphic design, where maybe it would have been a little bit more easy and flexible. I think folks that may be considering going one route or the other have to think about like the literal logistics of like when, if I have a full-time job, could I commit to these other things? Am I only shooting like weddings on weekends or, you know, that kind of thing, or events that occur outside of the scope, like, you know, in August every year? I don't know. That's like terrible for college athletics and football. But I think that's something that I've thought a lot about. And now that I am in a position where my day-to-day schedule is like a lot more rigid than it was working in sports, because, you know, nights, weekends, games, and shoots that pop up, I could take more opportunity to spend more time freelancing, but I choose not to altogether.
And going back to like, I think you're spot on with that, is if you're having to, like, when I look at the 2 previous places that I lived before now, I didn't even really look at it as, you know, I was at those schools and had sports there, but that was it. Like, there was no professional team, like, right there. There was no, you know, other college. And I was kind of focused on just college athletics. Mm-hmm. Living here, and especially the last 4 years where I have shot, like, two sports things since, like, full-time working in it.
It's ironic.
It's so many businesses that I could have been like, or nonprofits or associations or, you know, all of these different groups that I could have been doing freelance for on more of a corporate level. But I honestly didn't think that I ever wanted to work with corporate clients because I was like, oh, that's kind of boring work. I get to. And so that's something to consider.
Yeah, I hear it's better. I hear that's the sweet sauce is working with corporate clients.
And with the right clients, you get paid on time or beforehand. You know, there's, you know, contracts in place that you can, you know, put in. You don't have to net 60 them or net 30 or, you know, some people maybe net 90 when you work in some situations. But
those are payment terms.
Right. Payment terms.
If anyone's not aware
of, you know, you have 30 days to pay me or
from delivery, like from when you finish delivery,
from when you submit the invoice or after event date. So,
There's a bunch of different ways that you can approach it with your when you send them the proposal and everything.
Mm-hmm. So,
what do you guys typically do? Like, you say, pay me in 30 days
on
or
receipt.
60?
On receipt.
I usually do net 30. But it depends. There's so many different processes within different teams. A lot of them now seem to have the finance side of things more automated.
Yeah.
So you have to provide your W-9 mm-hmm. and other information for them to process. And a lot of them are starting to direct deposit into an account. So then they need that information, which I don't usually email or don't email because I don't like that to be through email, but
yeah.
They usually have a system that you insert all that into in a secure portal for the most part, and then they pay you within 30 days of receipt, which is pretty common. Sometimes it's after you finish the project, which I do if I know the client. Otherwise I usually do 50% up front, 50% on delivery.
Yep. And it really just depends on the people. Like, I've had people who, and this is the difference between working for state entities, working for organizations like schools and institutions, and working with teams, whatever. They, you know, I remember when I was a college student freelancing with ESPN or Fox Sports or CSS, who used to be a thing, and all of their payment terms were at least net 30. Mm-hmm. Like, you're
not changing some people,
right?
Some businesses, you're like, changing them.
Yeah, and sometimes they were doing so many events on top of each other. Like, sometimes you had to go and chase your money down. Like, hey, did you get this? And they're like, oh, well, we can't find this. So then you have to start that process almost over. And it wasn't even a whole lot of money. Like, it was like, you know, maybe it was good money as a college student. If someone, you know, you go grab some cables and they pay you $250, like,
any money is good money as a college student.
Right. Yes, but in the mid 2000s, like, you didn't have any like real bills and you can make, you know, money like that.
Can you pay my bills?
Yeah. But I think, you know, going back to something that we were just touching on is like, if you go into this industry as a freelancer, I know it's a lot of handshakes and high fives and this person, you know, I don't need it. If you can, I implore everyone to have a good invoicing system and contracts to save yourself and to save them. So, for example, when I say to save yourself and them, I work with a events company here. And I remember the first time that I worked with them on an event, it was for 4 days over the course of 2 weekends, but it wasn't like 4 full days. And we'll get into rates and all that stuff at some point. And I sent them over. Well, they were the first company that was like, send us a contract. And I was like, oh, like now I have to go create a contract, which I was able to go to HoneyBook, get a base contract, and then kind of reverse engineer it to fit what I wanted. But I send them the contract. They send it back. And they tell me to add certain things in there. Not just for their benefit, but for mine. Like, hey, you own this footage. This is the delivery. And I was like taken aback because I'm like, they, one, could have just, people don't really respect contracts, even though they should and, you know, be legally obligated, but they were looking out for both sides. So I worked with this company again a couple weeks ago and same thing. It's the same contract that I've always sent, but again, get an email back and say, hey, can you add these terms in there? Obviously, when you're going back and forth with someone about a contract, you don't have to agree to terms. You can negotiate what's in the contract. I've seen contracts that said, oh, well, we're not liable for X, Y, and Z. And if you don't want to sign up for that liability, you do not have to. You can say, hey, this doesn't benefit us. It's only, you know, it's a one-sided contract. Can we discuss? I've also had that, not particularly for my business, but for an organization that I'm on the board for. So it's so many layers of things that it goes beyond just, oh, I'm gonna go cover something, I'm gonna get paid, and I'm gonna walk away. It's like, are you gonna protect yourself in any of this, or
protect yourself and protect the work that you're creating
too? Absolutely.
Like, who's to say you shoot something and you could repurpose it for something else? Like, if it's not.
I'm glad you said that.
You know, that's another question that I have a lot, because now with the way things are moving with, you know, AI and stock video, and again, just like making the most of the time that you're spending creating this work, it's like the fine print of. To me, the fine print is what scares me about like making that full jump to like becoming a business owner or becoming a full-time freelancer, of like all the little details, logistics, like, do I use HoneyBook or do I do it all from scratch or do I hire somebody to help me? Like, to me, that's like,
my head
is spinning. Thinking about that.
So I get to cheat because my sister is a lawyer.
Ooh.
One of my best friends is a lawyer.
There it is.
All right, so let me tell you what I did.
Yeah, you're cheating.
I say that to say this. is I started with the HoneyBook contract, filled it out, sent it to them to say, hey, are these terms good?
And what did they say?
They were good because it was.
So HoneyBook is legit. Okay.
HoneyBook is legit. They both said, hey, it's basically a generic, contract. It's nothing that is like off the wall. Like, you're not cheating yourself out of anything. The one thing I will say, now this was a tip from my sister and shout out to her for catching this, is terms matter. In words. So if you use the word deposit in your contract, you should not. Because in law terms, deposit, they can get back. Retainer is non-refundable. Now, there's probably some more back definition before that, but that was one of the things that she did have me change. Instead of it saying 25% deposit is required, it says a 25% retainer to solidify this. Because with freelance too, is people can cancel something and not be, you know, I've had a ton of stuff canceled. There was no contract, so there was no money, you know, being able to get that, because a lot of times with freelancers, we're like, oh, yeah, I can do it. And you're depending on the word of someone. Also in my contract, because I am going to shoot stuff, a lot of times it has rain, like weather. Like if something is canceled due to weather, it is not
an act of God.
An act of God. However, something else to include in your contract, if you can, they can say yes or no. But if you're going to cover an event, include the food in your contract.
Never mind.
Yes, you say it. I know where you're going.
No, I'm just, for those that don't know, I'm about to get married. And I don't think that was in any of our vendors that will be with us on site's contract, mm-hmm. interestingly enough. But because I've worked on that side, it's a no-brainer for me for them to have the same food that everybody else is eating
mm-hmm. but
at our wedding. My fiance was like, why we got to pay all this extra money for them? Right? And from a contract standpoint,
mm-hmm.
I guess technically I don't need to. There is, actually, I lied. Our photographer did say that we need to provide breaks of a certain time also after important. They're working.
Yep.
But under no, like, it's interesting. I'm going to have to revisit. I don't think, like, meals have been included, yeah. which
and again,
is interesting.
You can negotiate what's in a contract based on what, on both ends.
Yeah.
If they don't want to provide food, you can say, okay, well, the give and take is my price changes a little
right,
bit.
Right, exactly.
Or I can take a break to go and get food. And again, working for this one company, we were at this event last week and food wasn't in our, you know, they were working with, they're an event company, so they're working for someone else and it wasn't included in their contract with the business or ours. So, but they were smart enough to say, okay, well, we'll just buy food for our crew of 16 people that are working here. And it worked out. But the legal person came back and said, hey, make sure that you all include that in the contracts moving forward. So that if we're at this event, it's 4 hours long. If there's food there, there was plenty of food left. There was plenty of drinks left. There was plenty of everything. But if you don't include that, they can say, hey, this food is not for you all. But if it's included in there, and it's also, it goes over a long way when you're working in an event and people are like, hey, you know, after you get what you need, just make sure you eat. Like some people will say, make sure you eat. Some people will be like, no, you're the help.
Mm.
Act like a fly on the wall. No one should feel that you're here. They may see that you're there, but they don't need to feel that you're there. Or you have some people who will also run out. And by running out, they will overstep their, you know, out where they're welcome, where they're like, get two shots. Oh, I have to make sure that I get, you know, something to eat. And you haven't even let all the guests. Freelancing comes with a lot of respect as well. Like you respect where you are because these people are paying you whatever. If you're a videographer, now it's a little different for Justin, or if somebody's just an editor, like it's cool. But if you're on site,
you got more headaches than I do for sure.
Hmm?
You got more headaches than I do for sure being on site.
But yeah. But Justin, how do you do it? Because we talked about the cheat code that Darius yeah. has with his lawyer.
Hey, if you need a lawyer, call me. I have plenty. I have plenty. So,
when I got laid off, I jumped right in, created my LLC through the state, and paid my $500.
When you say jumped right in, like, we talking the next day?
Yes.
Wow.
So, from my freelancing times that I freelanced when I was at the Celtics, I didn't do it very often, mm-hmm. but I took on a project when I had a couple days off, working with a local agency who does fabulous work. And I learned in that time that I didn't think agency was really for me.
Yeah.
But when I got laid off, I reached out to them because I had already had a prior relationship and said, hey, do you have anything that you need help with? And so they put me on a project. So I was working like the next day. So I think that's where the having some relationships up front is beneficial in those situations. But again, I'm fully remote and what I do has a low barrier to entry. My apps are all on my computer, internet connection. I can download footage or graphic elements or anything like that online. They can send it to me. So I'm fortunate in that way that I can work with people all across the country knowing that everything is accessible to me from where I am. And as long as I stay within the state of Massachusetts when I'm working on it, I don't have to worry about state taxes like you sometimes do if you're traveling and shooting. When I worked for the Bears, I had to pay taxes in like 9 different states and I was making pennies, so it was laughable. I think I paid more to file state taxes than I made from those states.
That's
or whatever.
Crazy.
Taxes are fraud.
I jumped in and I reached out to a couple other people. I posted on LinkedIn and thankfully I had people that had been following me for a little while. I built up, started my YouTube channel well, like 6 or 8 months before that. And people were aware of who I was and had been following my work and reached out and said, hey, we've been following you for a while. Heard you're available. Would you like to work with us? So I feel very fortunate from that standpoint that that's how everything worked out. The way I typically work is I create a proposal, which outlines basically an SOW, if that was on a contract.
Statement of work.
Statement of work. And after I talk to them, help them understand what they're asking me for, what deliverables I will deliver on, and then time when I will deliver them by. So once I kind of use that as my agreement. And then, like I said before, usually 50% up front. And once they submit that payment, I feel pretty comfortable with moving forward with them. So I knock on wood, haven't had any issues of people bailing on me and stuff. And I probably should do a contract, but after my time working with lawyers at a team, that is, I know there's a lot of levels to that. So that can really slow down your process. It can add money to what you pay. Because I don't have Darius's fortune. On
hey,
that front.
We're one call away.
But yeah, you're obviously I have more risk technically from that standpoint. And, I use QuickBooks for my invoicing, which makes things easy. I set it up, I can email it to them, they get it, they put it in their system, or I download it, export the PDF, send it to them. It has my logo on the letterhead. It tracks everything, tells me when things are coming up due. And I think it's like $12 a month or something like that. So it's cheap for what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's the part I don't like. The admin side.
So I have two questions to go back to. Justin, for you, how detailed are you getting on the deliverables and how do you backtrack from your delivery dates? Because like, do you budget in? Obviously, I know it's every project is different and some you might have like tighter windows to work with, but in a perfect scenario, you know, do you give out like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or do you give yourself some buffer room if there's like an emergency you have to deal with? Like, what's y'all's take on delivery dates?
If clients give me the room to have a buffer, I will definitely include a buffer. Usually I can get stuff done in 2 to 3 weeks, depending on the list, obviously. Mm-hmm. Some things take longer than that.
Yeah.
But if they come to me and like, hey, we need everything in 2 weeks and we're just starting this project and we need to have it done in 2 weeks because our season starts, then, it's kind of one of those, okay,
well, you make
we'll
get
it work. It done in 2 weeks. Yeah. And a lot of times I find that the first deliverable or two I try and find one that we know is going to impact the rest of the package, so that if there is feedback, it's heavier in the first or second one. And then after that, I understand
smaller,
more of what they're looking pieces for. And I can usually sprint from that point on and get them everything necessary with any other feedback that they have. But yeah, it depends on the client and how quick the turnaround is for what they need and when.
Also,
but I'd say 2 to 3 weeks is pretty consistent.
Yeah. Also, to add on to that is, it depends on if you have all the materials needed to complete that. Like if they, you know, some clients are going to drag their feet with getting you the details on the date or the, you know, the brand guides or the font, and you're, you know, some people want you to read their minds. And so if they take their time to get you what you need, then that affects the date. And so it's more so on them than it is on you. And you just have to be, you know, you have to be professionally firm. I think I need to put that in not even air quotes, but like in big letters, professionally firm.
That because, is life advice.
Yes.
That really is life advice. I needed that this past week. You need to be professionally firm with the people around you, like live work, play, everything in between. I think, that's great.
Yeah. For that reason, I actually, the couple contracts that I have done, I don't allow them to put hard dates in for delivery because it takes the both of us to come
dance
to those terms. So if I send them something and I'm a week ahead of delivery and they don't get back to me for 5 days, I'm not going to be the one responsible. So it has to be, so I won't put final due dates in there. They softened it to say something like,
within this period.
Yeah. As long as we're both collaboratively working towards this date and it's not like a hard and fast, because if you put that in the contract and you miss it, then they have an out. So
that's okay. That's really insightful. Cause for me, with creative work, right, everything evolves and changes and slight adjustments to things, especially, you know, from like a post-production kind of standpoint, I'd say more than anything, right? If you're shooting something, like you're shooting what's in front of you, unless it's like a creative stylized shoot. That's really cool. I like that. So it's like, it's not hard and set that way on both sides. It's like a legitimate relationship. Like you're working with your partner. Hey, on this date, you know, like it's, and even, you know, you talking about people that you used to work with, it's like in my head, I'm like, it's like an ex, like maintaining conversation like with your exes, right? Like
we're not doing that.
I mean, but you know what I mean.
But no, absolutely. But like to your point, it's like as long as you're both working towards the end goal, because people life gets busy, and you know they're outsourcing this because they need to get that time to do something else. But at the same time, like I said before, it's like they have to give you all of the information and dates. But like to Justin's point, let's say that he's working on a motions graphic package. We're 3 or 4 weeks out from the season. If you put it 2 days before the first game, he delivers, but you have changes. Now that puts him in even tougher spot, because there's got to be room for changes too. They're not just going to say, oh, well, we trust Justin. Whatever he gives us, we're going to go with because he's the expert. Like sometimes people think that they know what they want, or they think that, you know, the vendor, which we're considered vendors in a lot of cases, can just deliver. But then they see it and they're like, oh, well, what if we remove this? And what if we take this out? And what if we, you know, I don't like the way that this looks on this side, so can we change that? And so now, so going into that is something else that some people include in their agreements is you get this amount of work with this amount of revisions. Like if you don't include that, people may take advantage of it. Like they may. So funny thing, I have funny stories all day for freelance. So I reach out to a kid that I've worked with before, because I'm finally trying to get editing out of my wheelhouse. So I was like, hey.
What you got against editing? No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, it's something that I want to get the time back.
Yeah. Okay.
Like
I hear Karina's available for freelance.
Hey.
Yeah, once she finishes planning a wedding.
Oh wait, is that your friend?
No.
Yeah. So it was Karina. Karina reaches out. Oh, I mean, I reach out to Karina. No,
stop. I don't have time for that right now.
Exactly. I reach out to them and ask, like, hey, do you do freelance editing? And they give me a price. And I literally laugh to myself.
Oh.
Yes. And
in a good way.
Yeah, like an evil laugh or like you're happy or you're.
So, sidebar. You can get editing really cheap.
Oh.
Right now.
That's another
industry
topic.
Yep. with Fiverr, with Upwork. You know, people are using editors overseas. I haven't made it there yet.
You mean quality editing or editing?
Editing.
When you say Upwork, I automatically see like the quality.
So here's the trick with Fiverr. I've never even looked on Upwork's site. With Fiverr, you can get a $5, $10, $25, whatever editor. Like,
excuse
it's super
me?
Cheap. However, you can get a $25 graphic made, whatever. It's extremely cheap. Or you can get a pro editor on Fiverr for, hey, if you want. And it's like, I've looked at a couple of the people's profiles. Like, if you want a 30-second this, it is this amount, which is way over like what the $25 edit or $50 edit is.
God, I hope so.
Yeah. So it's like a couple hundred bucks. And so if it's a couple hundred bucks with this person, if you're charging, and again, pricing is a whole conversation, right? Because it depends on where you are, what you're trying to. But anyway, so you can get editing for an affordable price. I didn't know he was trying to, I was able to get it at this much of an affordable price. So I literally had to tell him that what he was thinking in his head could not be done because morally, thank God I have some morals. I couldn't pay him what he was saying for that edit. And so he was like, yeah, well, you know, I don't really know about, you know, a lot about freelancing. He's a college student. So I'm like, hey, this is a great opportunity for, you know, you to learn from someone who's done both, you know, well, done it all, worked as a student, worked full time, and now freelance. But it's interesting that not a lot of people, like, pricing is all over the place. There's not really a set market on. If you want a 30-second video, this is the market. If you want it at this level, this is the market. Like, you can get a 30-second video for hundreds of thousands of dollars if it's, like, for a large corporation for the Super Bowl. You know, so it just depends on what it is. But here's where I want to go with freelancing. This is why I said don't do it. If you're going to get out here and you've never freelanced, everybody has to get their feet wet, right?
Yep.
But if you're trying to do videos for $50, like a video shoot, you are ruining you're resetting the market. I'll use it that way. You're resetting the market. So if it's I'm in this class or this program, and my guy's like, you cannot be the commodity, because you can get a freelance videographer or a freelance editor for no money. If you live like a freelance editor or videographer, you're going to get stuck in small money, charging $150 or $250 or whatever. And it's not to say, oh, well, now you got to raise your prices, because who says that you're at a place to raise prices? It's a whole system of things out here that we have to get fixed in the freelance world, because every time that you cheapen the price, like, yeah, you may get those gigs, but then it's hard to scale up from going, oh, I was charging $75 a video. Oh, now I need to, you know, I listened to this podcast episode and they said, know your worth. Well, now I'm going to charge $850 a video. Who's going to pay you? Like, the people that know that you were charging here. So you just have to kind of go in there with a game plan in a sense, and know what you're trying to get out of it. If you're just trying to, like, get some reps, because you do need reps. Like, yep. I mean, I worked in athletics for 10 years full time. And when I went into freelance, I felt like I still needed to do reps, because I did sports. I'm not doing sports. So now I got to prove that, even though I'm an Emmy nominated, well, four-time Emmy nominated, Emmy award winner. We're not like Justin with like 27 Emmys back there.
That's eight, but
wow.
Wow. Okay.
Major flex. It's just eight. But
no, I like where you're going with that, because I think people, it's good to understand that there is a market, and I don't compete on price. I will not compete on price. If somebody comes to me and says, well, this person is going to do it for X number or less, great. Okay.
Bye.
I feel like what I offer in this space is different from quite a few people, and there's different levels to it too, right? I'm not competing with people who are working at the network level, like Too Fresh or Already Been Chewed or some of those companies that do phenomenal work. So I don't know that it matters as much that people come in with a lower price point. At a certain point it does, but I think I agree with you. Everyone has to get their feet wet, and they have to understand the business and how everything works. And I think a lot of people feel like setting their price lower is going to help them win clients. And that's not necessarily the case. So
in the short term, it might, but I think our message here is that you're playing the long game. But I think the other thing that has been top of mind for me is, like, and again, this may vary depending on people's skill sets, but your location, your physical location also matters, and your clientele, where they are, also matters, right? Like, if you're a videographer and you're in the Bay Area, it's a whole nother situation, because the Bay Area is very expensive. So you have to consider cost of living. But
Austin, Boston, but both of those are expensive.
Exactly. All those cities. But if you want to work in sports, or you want to have a lot of sports clients, you have all of these sports teams to work with, and all of these auxiliary events that these organizations are needing help with. Even if you're on a college campus, right? There's a lot more opportunity there. But if you're in, I don't know,
Auburn, Alabama.
No, I'm not even going to call
or Auburn. Or Oxford, Mississippi. Like those are small towns. Like you still have the, and this is a great segue into, like, knowing your situations of, like, we have a lot of people in the creative sports community, right? Sports creative community. And a lot of times we'll see people who are, hey, I live here, I would love an opportunity. A lot of times there's no portfolio, there's no reel, there's no connection. Like, if you're in Austin and you're asking for an opportunity to shoot track and field, but you've never shot track and field, and let's say that a school wants to pay $750 for the weekend, but you've never shot, and they say, hey, what's your budget? And they say $750. Oh, I'll take that. And then they get it, and it's like, well, did you shoot track before? Like, what is this? And sometimes we'll jump on opportunities that we're not ready because we're trying to get reps too high. So another situation, I'm talking to an intern of mine this week. He's getting ready to graduate. He's been at UT for, 4 or 5 years. So he's trying to figure out what's next. And we were talking about something similar. And he said, when I got here, I wasn't shooting football. Like, I was like the third camera at basketball, but I wasn't shooting like I wasn't the main shooter. He's like, but I would go to tennis with you. He's like, and that helped because I was able to get reps. And I was like, you get better reps with a sport that is so repetitive. The same thing happens over and over and over. And you can succeed. You can fail. You can try different angles. You can try different spots of the court. Golf is the same way. Like, you got 18 chances to get it right with five different, if you go to a different hole. So, but we have a lot of people who will come to college or try to get in the industry at such a high point. Oh, I want to shoot football. Why? Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to go shoot football, if you're in Texas, go shoot high school football. Or junior high football. Like, are you just trying to put that you worked University of Texas football? Just because it's a top brand? Oh, I shot with a top brand. Automatically, I can charge $5,000 for a shoot. Says who? Like, you have to know your situation and you have to get those reps in. And sometimes you gotta do the grunt work. Like, if you want to work in production, like, at a high level, like, don't even try to go to be a DP if you've never even been on a set with somebody. Director of photography, for those who may not know.
So this brings me to an interesting thing, because you're offering a lot of advice here.
So you told me you're telling me to stop giving advice. Okay.
No, I'm continuing. I'm continuing. Actually, excuse you. I'm continuing because I have a game idea as you were talking about, and this is for both of y'all. Think back to when you first started,
ooh,
to where you are now.
Ooh.
And each of you have 30 seconds to give as many tips and pieces of advice for what you would have gone back to do differently, right? Like, maybe it's, I would have used Tunny Book. I would have done this. I would have done that. I would have done that.
Oh, from freelancing freelancing, from way back when
for freelancing specifically, like, things that you wish you would have changed or done differently, or just any advice. So Darius, I'm gonna start with you. Why not?
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Okay. Ready? Set. Go.
Networked more. I would have spent a lot more time on marketing. A lot more time on reading. I would have done a lot more reading books. I would have asked more questions to people who are already doing it. Don't be afraid of free work. I would have done like free work just to get more experience. I would have traveled more to do work, and I would have done more admin.
Seven. That's pretty good. The last one, you would have done more admin. In what regard?
Yeah, I would have done it a lot more cleaner. Because I think, like, sometimes we just jump into something and it's like, oh, yeah, I got to go. Like, you're in a freelance hustle mindset. And I think that if you want, like, going back to what we talked about, if you want to be a business owner, or if you want to just do freelance you want to be a gig worker, or do you want to be an employer, essentially, as a business owner? So I would have thought more like a business owner and had a lot more things like, solidified. Like, I would have used contracts from day one.
Got you. Okay, and Justin, now it's your turn.
I think you nailed it.
You nailed it. Nothing to add.
I think one I would add is collaboration. Like, it's so we think in this competitive space, like, oh, I gotta compete. I gotta get reps, instead of saying, hey, Justin, do you have a project where, you know, if you need an extra shooter, or if you need a editor, or if you need like graphic design, like collaboration, instead of trying to build it all on yourself, on your own, to say, oh, I built this from the ground up by myself. There's no trophy for that. Like, you're going to work yourself into the ground. So like, collaborate with other people.
I think some people think there is a trophy for that in our industry, sadly.
I'll tell you what it is. You want me to tell you what it is? Death.
I mean,
yeah, that's the one thing that I think I would add to what he said, is I needed to take more breaks and time for myself.
Mm.
So when I started, I jumped in, and there was so much talk about a recession. Mm-hmm. There was so much talk about things falling apart in the country and economy and all that kind
of
stuff.
What year was this?
End of 2022.
Yeah.
So I told myself, well, if somebody reaches out, I have to take this project because I don't know when the next one's coming in. And I think that's scarcity probably pretty mindset. Typical. What's that?
Kind of a scarcity mindset. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
The phone's never going to ring if I don't accept this one.
And I'm not upset that I did that, because it made me realize that over time, I think after the first year, I was like, okay, I need to settle down a little bit. I need to focus on my health more, a little bit more, and making sure that I maintain myself, as opposed to trying to make sure that I hit everyone else's deadlines and needs and be there for everybody else if I'm not there for myself. So I think that'd be the one big thing that I would add to what Darius said. I've been good about it this year. Starting in January, I'm going to the gym 5 days a week and trying to focus on doing work within work hours and not working on the couch on my laptop, picking up extra side, quote unquote, side projects that were really just real projects. Because I think everything can creep into your day-to-day life, working from home, doing all that, if you don't put up a little bit more of a boundary. And I definitely didn't initially, because I had a family. I felt like I needed to make ends meet and make sure that I didn't lose any momentum on what I was making, or the lifestyle for my kids and what they're doing in their life. So yeah, I think that's the biggest lesson that I've taken away.
All right, so we're going to switch the game up for you then, because we can't let you off that easy. You get 30 seconds. Karina has the clock on business.
You're just upset that you had to go and I didn't.
Absolutely. Hey, so now the thing to think about is you also have to come up with a game for Karina.
Oh, jeez.
30 seconds to list out as many business essentials that you need in your toolkit. Like, if it was, so you're in motion design and design. What are things that someone can have, or the things that they should have in a, I won't even say successful business, but a good business, to make a good business as a business owner, not just freelance?
I'll list off things that I have.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on.
Doesn't necessarily make a good business, but.
Hey, but it works for you, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
These are things that they may not even be thinking of. So.
Ready?
Three.
Set.
Two.
Go.
So I have Monday.com for project management to maintain all the projects that I have going on and keep track of invoicing. QuickBooks for invoicing. I use Adobe products, After Effects. I have my own camera set up for my YouTube channel, and I use OBS. I have the Cinema 4D pack, which also includes Red Giant and Redshift. I have Sapphire plugins for After Effects for any effects that I
use.
Those are my core main
things
that I use on a day-to-day basis.
That's a great list. You got to have some of those basics. Like, and going back to the part about, you know, you can get somebody on Fiverr, but they may be editing on, and that when I say this is no knock, because I use this product and I think it's good. really good. You might have someone that edits on CapCut, and they're, you know, because they have a desktop app as well. But having those, you know, programs, and whether you edit on DaVinci or iMovie or any of those other programs that are not Adobe, there's nothing wrong with that. But
it's when your skill you get set.
Into right, when you get into that space of where, you know, you want a lot of stuff to work together, Adobe is definitely something that I, you know, I love to use. So having those tools to make your day-to-day, like having QuickBooks for your finance and having, you know, OBS and your camera and all that to do YouTube content. Like I'm actually considering doing maybe not a YouTube, but like some weekly video, like a visual newsletter, some type of something, just to build another audience and market, you know, the company and continue to grow. So what's your game for Karina? She's not getting away from this.
Well, let me think about it. Before we get into that, I want to ask it feels like a very simple, slightly dumb question.
It's not.
But it's I think highly relevant to this conversation. How do y'all set your rates? Or how did y'all set your rate at the very beginning?
I can see your face.
And how has it changed? Because how do you do it, right? For people that are like, I don't know where to begin. Justin, you mentioned don't base it off of your full-time salary. Like, where do you begin? Where does one begin?
Yeah, so let me tell you a quick story. When I got moved to contract, aka quote-unquote laid off, the company that laid me off offered me what my salary was divided into an hourly rate, which I think most people would think,
like, oh,
that makes sense.
It's
okay,
the same
they're paying me my salaries. That's apples to apples,
right.
But you lose your benefits. Mm-hmm. And when you, I should have included healthcare and all that kind of stuff in what I was talking about because it's expensive. And so you take on that. You take on all the business expenses that you have. You pay your own taxes. They pay you and you get the money. And then you have to pay estimated taxes to the government separate from that. So when they gave me my rate, I negotiated them up. I did like an extra 2/3 of what they gave me as my rate. And then we settled like a little bit less than that. So I'll tell you, they came in at $75 and I was like, that's really low. I have X, Y, and Z now. Now I don't have benefits.
Right.
And so I was like, I want $125 an hour. And I think we settled on $110. So when I went out into the market, $110 an hour over the course of an 8-hour day is $880.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my baseline. And I knew that if people got close to that, I felt like I was in a good spot.
Yeah.
Because I had also, from my time working at that agency, the agency owner had told me that in this area, and this was years ago, so it's probably not still the same, but was $500 to $600 was the going rate. So I felt like I was
an hour
pretty well. What's that?
An hour?
No, for the day. Sorry, okay. It was a day rate.
Gotcha.
So I thought I was making out pretty well with $880, knowing that was kind of the going rate for a local agency. So that's kind of how I started and thought about it. Now I did take some jobs that were less than $880, and those typically were ones where they had long-term engagement, a couple months. So that's where I started. My rate is much higher than that now.
Expensive.
As it should be.
Absolutely.
Because I feel like I've kind of found an area in this niche that allows me to do something that not many other people do. It's still a reasonable rate. And a lot of times I do project-based rates because if I did a day rate, I can, and I work faster than the deliverable, then I hurt myself by doing that. So a lot of times I do project-based rates, and I base it off, loosely base it off of my day rate and about how long I think it's going to take me. And that's the rate that I give them.
That is an incredible breakdown. Appreciate that. And also, I love the project-based rate and what you mentioned about the time, right? Like, you've worked on enough projects by now that you can churn and burn, and your output is probably a lot faster than the average person, which I think is Darius, to your point, right? The importance of getting those reps in, because the first time you do something, it's probably going to take you a while. Mm-hmm. You do it four, five, six times, you start realizing, oh, I can, you know, duplicate this or replicate this or automate this in this way. So I love that. I love that breakdown. And that's super insightful. This conversation is so valuable. Like, I hope y'all tuning in are taking note.
We're gonna have to break this into two separate
episodes. Honestly, it's fine though. Oh,
absolutely.
This is some good stuff.
Yeah, but I'll add to that slightly about the project. And so for videography, well, for what I do, it's more on a production side. A lot of times it's like one or two people, whatever. We're scaling in a different direction now, but beside the point. You have to decide, well, you have to build into your mind that you're not always going to get every cent that you think that you're worth. I'm going to preface it with that.
That's
but to
a great
Justin's
call
point
out.
Is some things you may think it'll take 10 hours and you can get done in 2 hours. But should you just get paid for 2 hours when it's 10 hours worth of work? No. So what goes into a day rate is, you know, you can, you know, everybody's day rates are different. Like, the market dictates, you know, what's like, if you're a part of a union, you know, you may have a certain cap on that, right? But if I go and cover an event and I know how many hours, like, I try to get to an event at least an hour and a half, 2 hours before it, especially if I've never been to the venue. Like, sometimes I may try to get there 3 hours before just to scope out everything, to, you know, if there's any setup, I need to talk to whoever the coordinator or the person who's hiring for that event to make sure that everything, like, I don't want to show up early. Like, the worst that can happen is that you can't get in the venue, but guess what? You also won't get stuck in traffic. And if you do get stuck in traffic, you're still going to be early in a lot of cases if you plan to show up early. Like, just do that. So build that time in, right? Because, like, for Justin, if you're at home, you're not having to travel to an event and then work the event and then come home and take, like, time is everything, but you're also not, in my case, going to get paid for every second or minute or hour that you're doing that work.
Do you round up? Do you round up? So you either book for a half day or a whole day?
Mostly I'll just do a whole day. And a lot of people will just do a whole day. So if somebody reaches out and say, hey, I have this this event I want to do, it's about 4 hours or it's 2 hours. Oh, it's just 2 hours. The minimum that you're going to get charged for me is for 4 hours. So I have an hourly rate that I just made up out of thin air. 4 hours times that is like kind of a half day. And then for a whole day, I have a, you know, depending on if it's you know, just a run and gun shoot or whatever, I'll charge a whole day, knowing that even if the event is 4 hours, I'm going to be there 2 hours before, and I'm probably going to be there a little time afterwards. Plus, I have to drive to and from. Everything in Austin is at least 30 minutes of a drive. So I'm building that in. Plus, Also, you're going to buy equipment. You're going to buy cameras. You're going to buy computers.
You have a lot more expenses that
right.
way. Yeah,
there are a
sure.
lot of expenses that, you know, you
or
can.
Or rentals. Or
absolutely. If there's a rental, I'll build that in into there. Or a hard drive. Like, I'll build that into it. And when you're working with the right clients and people, they will understand, like, oh, okay, cool. Like, that's the cost of doing business. But just because I can charge X amount for a day doesn't mean, oh, I need to, you know, because if I bring a second shooter, like, they have rates. And so I may need to build that buffer in as well, so that I'm not just coming out with like $300 or $400 out of a shoot. I build in enough, you know, buffer so that I can pay them their rate. I don't like to cheat people on their rates, whatever they are. I, as the person hiring, get to say yes or no. Like, hey, that's out of my budget. I didn't budget for that. Or, hey, if your day rate is $600 or your half day rate is $500 or whatever the rate is around here, mine is not that. It's much higher. yeah.
So you had mentioned, you said you made up your rate. So the way that I came, I obviously mentioned how I came to my rate. It was based on my salary, but then also wanted to make sure that the benefits were covered. And I think that's something that a lot of people who freelance that have a full-time job don't take into account.
Mm-hmm.
Because then if you jump out and want to do full-time freelance when you were charging a lower rate mm-hmm. because you had a full-time job with benefits,
it's hard to scale
it's
up.
It's going to be hard. It's going to be harder to jump your rate for those clients that you had been working with by like $25 or $30 an hour or whatever it is. So there's a book called Price and Creativity by Michael Janda. And he talks about taking all of your expenses and figuring out how many days you're going to work, how many hours in the days that you're going to work, because there we've talked about there's admin side of things.
Mm-hmm.
There's emails that you're answering, communications and all that kind of stuff that goes into it. So in order to figure that out, you like for me, I added up my monthly mortgage, all my utility payments, all of my expenses for the Adobe Suite, for Maxon, for anything that I use for work, that QuickBooks, mm-hmm. all those things that I listed off in the 30 seconds, anything that I use for my business needs to be accounted for. Then I take that and figure out how much that is. And then there's a little bit of profit on top of that that you need to have so you can actually make money and pay yourself. So that's a general starting point. And if you're interested in diving into that more, I highly recommend that book. It was super helpful.
Yeah, I should get that book myself.
So that's a good starting point to start thinking about it. And obviously, if you're newer in the industry or younger, your costs are going to be much less than mine because you're probably not living in Boston with a family and
or
kids
Austin,
as well.
Single bachelor.
Yeah, but so, that's a great, I love that breakdown. It's almost like starting with the reality of your what you need to pay, calculating mm-hmm. all of that and backtracking off of that, kind of like almost like working off of a soft delivery date and backtracking mm-hmm. of how yeah. all the things that you need to do. I think I love the level of detail y'all are going in here. It is super helpful and not just relevant to freelance,
mm-hmm.
not just relevant to freelance. I think if like you're looking for that next level or that next step up for a full-time position,
yep.
and you're trying to see what are the things that I need to do to get to that next level? Like, how can I grow my skill set and like work backwards from the goals that you have for yourself? Easier said than done, of course. The other thing that I'll recommend is shout out to my great friend, Safe. He's an amazing motion graphics designer, but he recommended this podcast. I still haven't listened to it, but it's on my list.
It's not the Creative Sports Podcast.
It's not just the kidding. Creative Sports Podcast, believe it or not. But School of Motion's podcast, where
oh, yeah.
they talked about how much do designers get paid. That's also a really good episode and talks about like the history of like how our industry as a whole kind of like screwed ourselves. And he was saying that, you know, they kind of compared it to the legal industry, right? How lawyers set their hourly rates and like now where they are, which is all related to the things that we've talked about so far. But there's a lot of good, a lot of good nuggets in this, in this podcast.
So yesterday I was actually on a group call and we were talking about project pricing, and the guy leading the call yesterday does a sales training with us as well. So I'm in a coaching program that, you know, is coaching you on how to scale your business. And he basically broke it down, and this is more of a video agency like breakdown, but like when you're pricing out or estimating a project cost, and you know, you got to think about what the tasks are, what your desired hourly rate is, you know, have a markup for that, how long you think it's going to take, and then that's where you come up with your rate in hours. So the four things were: how much time are you spending planning or pre-production? Because a lot of times we just do that with no charge associated with. But you know, once you get to that level of deliverable, because if you're just a person that shows up to, let's say, a wedding, you're just coming there, shoot it, and then just edit it. There's no planning. There's no, you know, working through. The more that you can add to the more value that you can add, the higher your price can be. But if you're just showing up as a, you know, like I just talked about, like having a second shooter, if that second shooter isn't providing their camera, you're providing it as the person that's hiring them, then no, they're not going to charge you X, right? Like this higher amount, because you're providing all of the equipment. You assume all of the risk. So planning, then the actual filming, the editing, and then posting it, like if you're posting their work for them. And so back to Justin's point.
Storage.
So we talked about storage as well, which is something that I have to change my entire mindset around, because I've been, you know, storage is expensive. It's a lot more affordable than it used to be. I'll start there, but it can get expensive. Like I just re-upped on Google Drive, but I also have Google Drive and Dropbox because some people use Google Drive, some people use Dropbox, but also like, are you just holding on to footage? And
is that in your contract?
It
Would
has
you put that in your contract and say, I'm going to charge you more if you want me to hold on to this.
It Otherwise, hasn't you- been, but he went over that. He was like, we give people a week and maybe it stretches out to a month or a couple months, but also consider that, because if you're paying, you know, I have 5 terabytes of space on Google Drive, don't recommend. And I have 2 terabytes on Dropbox. Those are 2 subscriptions that you are paying. Now, granted, we didn't talk about this either. As a videographer, you, unless it's in the contract, the ownership, who owns the copyright to the footage that is shot? That can be a whole entire episode. But long story short, it probably is the person who's shooting the footage. So we're talking freelance, right? Like non-sports. We're not talking about like working for the Warriors or shooting a UT game. You don't owe that because you sign off on an agreement that says, I do not own this footage. Like you can use it as in some marketing or your portfolio and all that.
Yeah.
I remember looking at the back of the, if you work freelance in sports, look at the back of the credential because it has specifics to, you don't own this. This is the property of this institution or this organization. But
or the NCAA.
Right. Or the NCAA. So with that being said, it's like you have to, like, if you're just holding on to people's footage, it's just taking up space. So he gives them a week, maybe a month's top to download it and get it on to their platform. And then he may offload it. He may, you know, if he wants to use it again, he can in his promotional purposes. But that's a lot of footage. Like, I have so many hard drives and so many, like, folders of footage that would be, if I could just hire an intern to just go through everything and delete or log what I may want to use one day, that would, if you are bored and you want that task and you want to make some money, I may be willing to have a conversation with you about that, because it's a lot. But to your point, Justin, that will be something that I incorporate into agreements moving forward, is you will get, this is the delivery timeline, whether that's because a lot of people will use, a lot of people that I work with are using like a cloud, Google Drive or Dropbox or whatever to save their footage. And even if you send it to them, it's still on your storage. And so you reserve the right to add that in there and say, hey, you have 21 days after delivery to get your footage or it's gone. Because you're fronting, I mean, you're paying the price for that.
Yeah, and I think no matter how much we talk about pricing and how you should think about it, what you should include in it,
mm-hmm.
someone still has to be willing to pay you the price Absolutely. That you're asking mm-hmm. For you to have.
Yep. And sometimes they don't have
career,
it.
A career in general.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like, you'd be surprised, like, if you're working, Justin, you're probably familiar with this, is like, one of the first questions to ask is like, what is your budget? And they, a lot of times they don't know.
What if they don't give you one?
That's the hardest place to be in, because they're looking for then, okay, how can I bid this against each other? There are also, you know, just so that people know, like if you're working for a state or a city or institution, there are limits on what they can spend without going through a certain process.
Or they legally have to, you know,
where they legally
try
have
three
to,
different
right.
avenues. Mm-hmm.
Definitely yeah. running into that more in sports too.
Right.
Really? Oh, yeah. Wow.
You,
even pro level?
Yes.
Oh.
Interesting.
There's a guy named Blair Enns that talks a lot about this. He has a podcast called Two Bobs that I listen to.
Two Bobs.
And he talks about how you can, how you
Two
should
Two Bobs,
approach.
Like Bobcats? Yeah.
Like Robert.
Got it, got it.
Yeah, Bob.
Okay.
yeah, he talks all about this. He's the one that everyone kind of points to as leading the value-based pricing charge,
mm-hmm.
so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely different ways to approach it and try and feel out the customer. This is all stuff that we talked a little bit before we really started recording about feeling like we always have to constantly learn something. And this is the thing that I'm trying to learn more about and understand how to talk to clients. Obviously, I have good relationships with clients, but how to talk to them, figure out what they need, and, you know, go from there about how to, when someone reaches out to you, how do you know if they actually want to work with you or if you're just the second or third bid that doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm.
And that's a
sometimes
great...
you may be the bid, you know, you, they need a, another qualifier to,
and they said that's okay. But if you know that up front, you can say, tell me what you want me to put on
Absolutely.
This bid and I'll send it to you and save us both time.
Absolutely. Which you probably can't like legally say it, but
yeah.
it's also a way to say, hey, if, don't waste my time of like putting a lot of, you know, into that's something else. Like with proposals, like having a, especially if you're working on more of a project or an event like pricing. Like I started out not really having a, you know, hey, it depends on what type of event it is or what type of this. the time that you'll spend trying to configure something and personalize it, like if you have custom pricing, it's going to cost you way more time. But if you have something that is like a base, hey, we start at $1,500 a day for X, Y, and Z. If you want, you know, more of these items in it, it's, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000. Like if you, a lot of times these, having worked a lot of events and with people, they don't know for sure what their budget is, but they do know what they don't want to spend. So if you give them a proposal of $8,000, everybody's not going to be like some of the people that I worked with that says, that's not enough. Up that.
Build. Are you looking for a BMW or a Toyota off the lot?
Absolutely. So, you know, when coming up with these offers and proposals, you know, have that. I was going to age myself and say a Toyota Tercel. You know, like a,
I don't even know what that is. It's, but I'm older than you. How is that possible?
Yeah. It was like this small, compact car that they used to have. Or do you want the Corolla? Do you want the Camry? Or do you want the Avalon? You know, if that's the brand that you, because you may be a Toyota, shout out Toyota. I'm on my third one. You may be, that may be where you are as a company.
Darius is about to clip off this segment and send it to his local Toyota.
I know the GM there, so I may.
Oh, see? There we go.
Do you pay more?
I lease, just because for several dumb reasons, but I don't drive a whole lot if I'm not working. And so, yeah.
Same.
So you may be, you know, Toyota is a great brand. They last forever. You may be Toyota. You may be a BMW. You may be a Ferrari, right? But each one of those also has a different model and level. So if you know that you're one of those companies, then you can set your, okay, here's my Corolla, you know, base model. This is what you get. It's still a great value. You can get a lot out of it. Maybe a Camry. A little more room. You know, got some more features. Or you may be, you know, a 4Runner or a Tundra or whatever. You know, like you have to know what value you're offering and not just, oh, well, I want to make $1,500 a day as a day rate because Justin's charging $1,500 a day. Justin's got 20 years of experience on. Okay.
God, I'm old. That's
high. We're going to shift into this as well.
Oh, I feel like this episode is probably ending soon.
It is. It is. And see, you said that, and then I forgot what shift I was going to.
Oh no, downshift, and then
downshift. See, again. Got a downshift. So we're talking about, you know, experience levels, right? I say this, and I've said this 20 times, probably on episodes. Your talent is one thing. If you are between the ages of 18 and 28 right now, probably a little bit wider. People are a lot more talented now than when all three of us came through, right? And we had talented people in our age group. We won't give away our ages, but we're all close in age. Talent isn't the issue right now. Everybody has talent. But what can you add on top of the talent? Like, they are killer editors, they're killer videographers, motion people. But just because you have talent does not mean that your value is at whatever the high end is.
Your value goes up if you can fulfill a need.
Can you solve problems?
Yeah.
Outside of just getting the order fulfilled. Think of it as a fast food restaurant. If you're just taking orders and, you know, taking money at the window, that's one skill, right? It requires
commodity.
Right. If you are the person that is managing those people, or you're managing and You know, hey, we got a lot of orders and you're taking, your value goes up. If you own the place, your value is higher. So if you're just a videographer and an editor, your day rate may be $400. But if you own the company and you can help with strategy and scripting and all of that, or you can do some design and videography, you can also break those things out into different, like I don't just charge what I charge as a day rate for videography, editing, and, you know, delivery.
I was going to ask about that. It's more like a la carte.
Hey, if I'm there for 8 hours, that is 8 hours worth of videography. If it takes me 10 hours to do the edit, that's 10 hours of editing. If it takes me 2 hours to deliver it, you know, on the exports and re-edits and all that, that's another price. So you don't just have to look at it as one thing. You can add all of those things in there. So my point is, your talent is only one part of the equation. Get some more skill sets, learn business. You don't have to go to, you know, Harvard School of Law to learn the basic necessities of
school of hard knocks,
you know. And it, you know, you're going to bump your head a lot of times in business. Like, there are still some things, like we talked about, some things that we wish we could have done better, some things we want to add, some things we want to, you know, you can always learn how to do more. If you create a video agency, you got to know how to sell something, the basics of selling. Like, how do you get people in the door? Like, word of mouth is great. It's great if people are talking on your behalf. What happens if they stop talking? What happens if they stop sharing your name with other people to say, hey, Justin did this great work for me, you should hire him. But just because Justin passes your name or somebody passes Justin's name doesn't mean that that person, doesn't mean that Karina's going to hire him. You know, learning funnels, like what's top of funnel, what's middle of funnel, what's bottom of funnel. If you don't know what funnels are, learn the basics of what those are. Most people are not at the bottom of the funnel ready to buy. Like when they reach out to you, and you got to be okay with hearing the words no and not yet and maybe, because everybody's not ready to, you know, get your service. You can say no to clients as well. Like, Justin, how many people have you said no to? Like, this just probably isn't, but it's not zero.
Yeah.
Means your service isn't for everybody.
Oftentimes it's not that I say no. It's that I have a general idea of their budget and my price goes up because I'm busy and they say no to me.
But you reserve the right to shift that price. Like, that's...
Yeah, it's like Disney. Getting a Coke at Disney is 10 times more expensive than...
Going to a college football game or a baseball game, like NFL game, like the prices of that drink or those fries is more expensive than if you go into a convenience store. And they reserve the right to not let you bring in outside stuff because they provide this service so that they can, you know, they have a monopoly on what can be consumed within those confines. So it's a lot about freelancing and business that I don't know, a lot that Justin doesn't know. Karina's asking us questions, you know, because it's a general interest. But like, the money may look good on the, you know, from the outside looking in, like, oh, I need to quit my job tomorrow and do freelance. Are you just talented and don't want to have a supervisor and just want to, you know, do what you want to do? You're going to always have someone that you have to answer to, because your clients are then your supervisors or bosses, right? Like, there's always somebody that's not going to like what you do. Like, hey, can you change this? And sometimes you have to be professionally firm on saying, I get that you want to do this, but not just because I think that this is a great creative edit, this is not the right thing to do. Like, I'm not going to turn this whole screen blue for you. I'm just not. Like, so you have to, respect goes both ways. It's a two-way street. It's not just one. Oh, well, they're paying me, so I have to do exactly. Like, you can be professional and get them on track with saying, hey, I know that you want to do this. And sometimes you have to just bite the bullet and say, hey, this is what they want to do. I'm going to do it. Whether it's 100 changes, whether it's 200 changes. When I, like the year after, well, about 7 months after I stopped working at Texas, I worked for, I had a cookware company reach out. Well, a recruiter who was hiring for a cookware company. And I worked there for about 6.5 months, one of the best companies that I could have ever worked for. I was, you know, I would go into meetings. When I was working in college athletics, I was very verbal because I knew, you know, I knew what good work looked like. I knew what quality work looked like. I knew what quantity looked like, all of that. Working in an industry that I had never been a part of, going into actual marketing meetings, which in athletics, marketing meets with marketing, creative meets with creative, sales meets with sales. It's not like a huge meeting. And I would just sit and observe a lot. And I talked to the CMO one day and she was like, yeah, you know, well, you know, we've seen all your edits from like college athletics and like, we want some of that energy. And I'm like, but you told me that you wanted, you know, this is what you were looking for. She was like, no, we want you to like take over. And I'm like, it's your product. I was like, I've fought people for so long to do good work, but I'm just trying to deliver on what you say that you want. And so you got to know what, you know, where your position is in that. Do they want you to do it for them? Do they want to do it with you? Or do they want you to just do it and, you know, not ask for any input and just do that? So you got to know what situation you're in. You got to know who you're working with and all that. So that's my
spiel. Got to know when to hold them. Got to know when to fold them.
Absolutely. Corinna, you are not off of the hook before this part one of the episode ends. You have 30 seconds. And Justin, what is her game?
Here we go.
Wait, before you do that.
To name as many Adobe products as you can.
Oh, that's fun. I like that.
No, we're not doing that. That is too easy. You guys hire freelancers or like contract people? Name as many things or qualifiers.
Wait,
that
me?
You look
what?
For. Yeah. Yeah. That you're looking for in a freelancer or a contractor working on a project for Adobe.
Oh, like if I, oh, interesting. So I don't really do that in my current role.
Were.
But if I were, yeah. If I were, okay.
Hold on. We got a clock here, not the calculator. Or do you have something better, Justin?
Well, I was actually wondering if it kind of goes along with what you just said, making it so that it's, if looking back, you're a student, now that you've gone through your career working at these places, what are the skills that you find most valuable to your job, whether it was in the NBA, at Auburn, at Illinois.
She's worked so many great places.
Adobe. What skills have been most useful for you through your life that you would definitely learn if you were still in college?
And to like add on to that, like people are always asking, like, how do I get to where you are? And I hate that question. But it's kind of, this is a better way of asking that question, because like, what skills are necessary? Or would you put in your toolbox to become Corinna?
Oof, this is tricky.
So we're going to end on this, so it better be good.
No pressure. Ooh, it's a loaded question. So many ways.
3, 2, 1.
Be adaptable. Push yourself to learn something new every single day. Push yourself to stay ahead of the news, like what's going on in the industry. Force yourself to learn new products and new tips and tricks, especially if you're creative, like whatever it is, editing, shooting, just do it with your phone, with whatever you have at your fingertips. Be a team player. Be kind. That's really hard.
Hey, that was good. That was good, though. Those are all soft skills that, you know, we focus so much on hard skills sometimes. Can you edit? Can you color correct? Can you, like, those soft skills are so important. Just like, it does go beyond being just kind, right? Because kind people get run over a lot of times. So like a couple years ago where that was like the thing.
That's why you got to be professionally firm.
You got to be professionally firm. I need to work on that. You got to set boundaries. I'm too nice. People know. Like, I know. I am way too nice. And it is.
And sometimes the pendulum kind of swings, right? It's like if you're always nice and people are always using you as like a doormat, people will walk over you. But it's okay to say, hey, I know that you waited until the last minute to, you know, bring this to me. I know that you need help with this, but with the time constraints, we just need to extend each other grace on this. Because if we don't, you're only going to piss me off and I'm going to in turn retaliate and piss you off. And then it's going to be this, you know, this competition, right? This back and forth.
The pitchforks come out.
And these are the things that, you know, going back to when you asked me about, you know, what are some things that I wish that I was initially thinking, like, what are some of the things that I wish that I had done, or some of the things that I wish that I had known working in the collegiate space that I've learned so much more. Like, I'm a lot more patient now than I used to be. Like, clients may tick me off, and I may disagree, but I have a lot of more grace for that. And I don't think that we teach the grace part enough. Like when you're working for a company, like it's a lot of pressure on the company as well, or the department or whatever. And everybody is so focused on how it makes them feel. Like, oh, you came to me with this last minute request. The world is over. It's like that person may have gotten the last minute request. And then they may have gotten, the person who gave it to them may have gotten the last minute. So it's, I wish that I had more grace and patience back then, but I would probably be still working in college athletics full time if I, you know, was a little more professional, professionally firm rather than like, no, I'm not doing this. Like, you shouldn't have waited, or a lot less aggressive. Or aggression. But nobody was teaching that back then either. Like now it's like, oh, just be nice and kind. You don't know what people are going to do. That is true. But don't use my kindness for a weakness.
So in the intro, I talked about freelancing, collaboration managing, and scope creep. So next episode will be collaboration managing and scope creep.
It's going to be what?
This one went 10 times longer than I expected it to.
Same.
Yeah, because it was good.
Hopefully helpful.
Yeah.
Very helpful. This was awesome.
And reach out to Karina if you have any more questions.
No, don't reach out. Reach out to y'all. This was awesome. Lots of good intel. And I learned a ton. So appreciate this.
Yeah, Justin and I are going to start a boot camp.
No, again, like I said, I did maybe, what, 2 projects last year. I think I've not done but one.
You got golden handcuffs with your Adobe salary too, I'm sure.
Well, that's ultimately, I think the other thing that was kind of top of mind, like for me, my time outside of work right now is extremely valuable to me. Mm-hmm. And as such, my rate goes up because of that, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm talking out of my...
That's why I haven't hired her to do any projects.
But it truly is like, I value my personal time outside of my job. And I also value my job and I want to stay focused on that. And not that I can't stay focused if I am freelancing, because a lot of times it's just, I'm working a little bit later hours. I'm, you know, not choosing to like go out and do as many fun things or go shopping. Instead, I'm like focused on finishing a project. So all of what you guys have shared has been really insightful. And I think in the way our industry's moving, you know, a lot of folks are like, oh, I'm going to quit my full-time job. But you mentioned so many things that like you really just have to consider that, you know, there's the grass is always greener,
where literally you water whatever, it.
Where you water it. But truly, I think, you know, I look at y'all and sometimes I'm jealous, but then other times I'm like, no, I'm not jealous. Right.
Don't
like,
be.
And I think it goes the pendulum, it swings. So this has been a great conversation.
Yeah. To that point, and we don't want to extend this episode. Going back to what I first opened this up with, was saying, don't do it. Right. And that's the title of this episode, is don't do it. It is hard to work a full-time job if you have commuting into that and then do freelance. Like, at the end of the day, your full-time job pays you, hopefully, benefits. They pay, like, your own salary. That is your main priority. This is on the side. But it is hard doing it on the side when then you have to think about, if I reach out to you, Karina, and you work 8 to 5 as a Adobe employee, you obviously work from home, so there's no commuting. At 5:30, you can get on it, right? Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's commuting involved, you may not get home until 6:30. I've worked a full day as the agency owner, and now I have to extend into your time. So I'm almost having to work 2 shifts to fit within, you know. But also, if you're going to freelance, be a very good communicator, because you got to be able to communicate that, hey, on these days, I won't be available until 8 or 9. Like, is that okay with you? Or you're going to receive like project updates during the middle of the night. I know you'll respond the next day. Tonight is going to be a late night, but tomorrow I'll be, you know, available starting at 4. Like, you got to be able to communicate. And, you know, when people are reaching out to say, hey, what's the update on the project? Man, I got to, you know, don't give me those. I got a job. Like, you want this project. Or so there's a lot more that goes into freelancing on the side and full time that we didn't cover in this episode, but we're coming back for another one at some point.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day.
Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives.
If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.